What's up, guys? Welcome to the show. Successfully Unsigned. DJ Overheat here, along with Dale Shack. It's been a minute since we've had all three of us. We still do not have all three of us. Patty G is still away.
He went home to visit some family. So okay, family time's important, and especially when you get off the road, you got to see the people you care about.
Exactly. He's been on 17 tours, so he thought it was time to go home and, you know, visit some family. But we're holding it down. As always, subscribe to the channel. Follow us, Successfully Unsigned, everywhere. SU-podcast.com is the website. Our interview today is going to be...
It's going to be a good friend of mine, Cole Thanish. He's someone I've worked with for the last few years. He's a vocal coach and is just going to... It's going to be a great interview, even though we haven't filmed yet. And I have no idea fully the scope of what we're going to talk about when we go into the next room or this room again and film this. You're going to be blown away with the advice that he has, especially for you artists that are singers. It's like singer forward artists and want to kind of expand your ability, especially probably before the show and getting prepared for your shows. That's where I'm hoping a piece of this conversation with Cole goes, and wherever else it goes, I know that's going to be very, very beneficial for each of you that listen.
Yeah.
And for me too.
Yeah, I know. I was telling you today on the phone, I'm looking forward to it as well, just because I'm a singer. I like to know how to warm up better. Don't drink caffeine, you know, before you warm up or anything, or try and sing anything cold is hard. Like, those are the normal things, but you know, those exercises that no one really talks about, the unattractive, the sounds and the jaw workouts and all that. I want to hear about that. I'm curious. And so,
and I tell you, before every gig that I work with Cole, those gigs, we typically have four vocalists. And so it's just like a little circus of all these noises around the room. And you're like, huh? Where's that one coming from? You know, and it's somebody warming up.
Yeah.
Because that stuff is important and it's not talked about enough. Yeah. And if there are things that you think should be talked about more, or elements of your artistry that you just feel like is just a total dark zone in your knowledge, let us know and we'll try to find the people that have the information that will help you in your career, because that's really, again, what we're all about, helping people get from, you know, being a DIY and a rookie artist into finding success at your live shows, in your music that's recorded, and finding success here in the music business.
So. Yeah. Well, speaking of live, we're getting into our music business portion of the show. We're going to talk about TikTok tonight. And this new phenomenon of live streaming that's been going on TikTok. Live streaming's been around forever with Twitch and all these other avenues to do it with gaming, but now there's this push for musicians on TikTok to get on there and live stream. Doesn't always have to be their stuff. It can be just covers, but it's gaining some traction. I know, Dale, you don't have a TikTok, but
I do. I just don't use it.
He just doesn't use it, but he does. He does have one somewhere in his phone.
You know, I say that, and I deleted it off my phone, but I still have my account.
Yeah.
And so I use tools like Adobe Express a lot for various things. But I do love their scheduler because it allows me to post to a whole bunch of different platforms all at once. And I don't have to be logged in on my phone to do it.
Right.
So like I posted today to Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. And if I wanted to go to LinkedIn and some other ones all at the same time, I could.
Yeah.
And I don't have to write separate things and write at once.
Yeah.
And again, for TikTok, because I can easily, like so many people, spend so much time scrolling on TikTok once I'm on there. I don't have that tendency to just hop on it all the time. But when I had it on my phone, when I would get on it, I would spend too much time. And so I'm like, that's not good for me.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'll just get rid of it.
Yeah.
But it's still really, really important in the music industry.
Absolutely.
And this is one of those avenues that's maybe becoming even more important for artists to know about and to get involved with. So what were you telling me before we hit record and started recording this episode about TikTok live streaming?
Yeah. So they have this feature now called Live Fan Club feature. So I'm going to read here. TikTok launched a live fan club feature designed to gamify the live stream viewing experience and encourage deeper audience engagement with creators. Viewers can join a creator's fan club by sending virtual gifts and a level up by participating in missions such as watching streams, commenting, and sending gifts. So you're gamifying the streaming experience in the way that you would a literal game like Call of Duty or whatever. You know, you're basically rewarding people for how for how much of a fan they are of you and your content. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, I just can't wait for the time when someone reaches level 30 and then suddenly the algorithm changes and they nerf like some perk you get.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, like if you talk about like Call of Duty, you know, like Cold-Blooded going from being like awesome to not, or, you know, any of the perks, any of the guns, whatever. Like, I can't wait for something to change. Of course, I'm sure what the perks are. Yeah. Probably would be my, at least my assumption would be that the perks can be assigned by the artist. You know, that way you're getting a more direct interaction with your friends and your fans.
Yeah.
And there's a little more personalization there.
Yeah.
But man, getting leveled tiers and missions to support an artist, is this peak? Are we getting close to peak entertainmentalism? You know, in like the days of Rome with the Colosseum. Is this just a distraction?
Here's what I love about it. There's finally a way to settle who's a bigger fan of a person.
Ah.
You know? Because you can show them your prestige. Like, if I'm a fan of John Mayer, I'm a double prestige on TikTok Live. I'll be watching him. Because he does that. Like, he'll go on Instagram Live. And he'll play guitar. And he'll teach on there.
Okay.
And, you know, hundreds of thousands of people watching. I don't know if he asks for gifts or anything. I imagine he needs them, but it'd be so hilarious if I was in an argument with the guy. I was like, "You, this album's better. No, this album's better. Oh yeah, how big of a fan are you even of him? Two prestige, double prestige. What do you have, sir? Nothing, nothing. So, but on a serious note, I think it's just another step. It's another step in fandom, you know, that's bigger than just we're going to your shows. We can, there are different ways to support who you want to support without leaving your home, which is huge. And, you know, we were talking before we went live about just the element of, is this another legitimate income stream for artists now? You know, like, you know, I know in the gaming community, quick plug, I do stream games. Not well, but I do stream games.
Where can they find you? I've watched a couple of your streams. Yeah, they're fun.
They're fun. I just changed my name on there on Twitch. It's David, not Dave. I'm probably going to change it back to Irrational Polar Bear in the next few months, but I'm trying out David Not Dave.
I like David Not Dave. I noticed that the other day.
It's different. It's different. But in the gaming community, go find me on Twitch. In the gaming community, I feel like it's almost like a level of professionalism with gamers of like, I'm going to stream between these times.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure the back of my room, my set is appealing because you want eyeballs, right?
Yeah.
When people scroll across your stream and they see a boring background, which mine is right now, but it's going to get better. They're not going to stay.
Yeah.
Making sure they have like a ring, like being professional with it, but also knowing that they can make money off of this.
It becomes a job.
It does become a job.
Yeah.
And there are obligations with it, but it's, you know, some people get on there and they'll make a good $100 getting on there for an hour or, depends on how many people are on there, but you could have a night where it just blows up.
Yep.
That's the thing about it, is you never know when it's going to take off.
You know, as I was just thinking about this, how often have we heard people say, oh, well, you know, gaming's not a legitimate business. It's not a legitimate job or whatever. You know, what value are you bringing? You know, how are you making money with this? Whatever, right? And And correct me if I'm wrong, but at least this is my perspective on it. And if you have a different perspective, let us know down in the comments. But gaming, you are becoming a personality. Anybody could just go play that game. Mm-hmm. Anybody could play that game and have fun playing that game.
Mm-hmm.
Gaming, if you are streaming, if you're becoming that kind of thing as a job, as you know, as a way to make income, you are banking on becoming a personality that people care about watching.
Mm-hmm.
How is that any different than the morning shows that, you know, people used to watch? Some people still watch them, but, you know, that were like so prevalent 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, think about all the morning shows that are nothing but, and what do they call them? TV personalities.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a personality. You know, maybe they bring on a guest or whatever and they have an interview, maybe, you know, that can be kind of cool. But a lot of it's just them talking. A lot of it's them showing off a product. Aw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that's a different side kind of thing from music. But
yeah,
but it is still kind of tied into music because so much of the music world is also, yes, it is about your music, but so much of you getting in front of new people is about you and your personality.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that a lot on this show.
Yeah.
It's about how can you get fans of you and then they'll become fans of your music.
Yeah.
Which is kind of to artists feels like, yeah, it feels like it's backwards.
And it's another avenue for people to discover you.
Right.
Right. Like if they scroll across you on live and they're like, wait, hold on. That was a cool thing you just played. Yeah. Let me go back. Oh, that's a cool song. I know that song.
Yeah.
Who is this? You know, mm-hmm. That wasn't a thing 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It wasn't. So
you have to be entertaining.
Exactly.
And it's a whole encompassing thing. Whether you like that or not, it's all encompassing. Are you funny? Lean into that. Are you serious? Lean into that. Are you really dramatic?
Uh-huh.
Lean into that. Are you mysterious?
Mm-hmm.
You know, lean into whatever kind of character you are creating. But to a certain extent, you kind of have to be larger than life because if you're in the entertainment field, you have to entertain.
Yeah.
How are you going to do that?
Right. And whatever personality mm-hmm. that you choose, just know there is a community for that personality.
Absolutely.
And we all just want community, right? Like that's why Twitch blew up. That's why TikTok's blowing up. Like all these platforms, people feel like they're involved in a community.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it is you just playing a game, it's like, you'd be surprised how many people will sit down and like watch you react to that game and like hear your commentary on that game. Cause that's all it is.
Yeah.
It's basically just you're reacting to that. And people are also a part of that.
Yeah.
And so your personality is huge. Right.
You have to interact with
you have to interact. And if you're playing music, it's the same way. And that's why a lot of people, they'll get on, they'll take requests or they'll, you know, like, hey, I'll play this song for $5 or, you know, they'll just play some of their own original music, you know, and just see where it goes. But, you know, I might try it at some point. I would encourage you guys to try it and just see how it works. See how it goes. You know, it's another way. It's another stream. It's another tool available to you on these apps that can help you grow your audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you use this, if you go live as a musician on TikTok, let us know how good of a tool that is, because different tools have different uses and different effectiveness levels.
Yes.
And, you know, for instance, like it seems to me to a certain extent, Instagram Live never reached the same kind of status as like Facebook Live did in their heydays.
True.
Right. Instagram just didn't seem to me to do quite as well. But it still does really well,
mm-hmm.
right? It's still a good tool to use. Use it. Absolutely use it.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube's live feature doesn't seem to do anywhere near as well as some of the others.
It's starting to pick up, though.
But is it? I haven't
YouTube
paid attention.
Is, as far as gaming, I know.
Okay.
People are going to YouTube now.
Okay.
But that's like a brand. That's like a newer thing, I feel like. It didn't used to be that way a couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's now the place people are going. But it's unpredictable and you have to adapt.
So here's my question. If you're an artist and you're doing this gamified version of streaming and building fans and having these tiers and these levels, what are some of the things that that we all should expect to see becoming perks of those levels?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, you and I were talking about some of the like live show benefits, maybe like ticket prices for people who are higher. I keep saying prestige, but you know what I mean. They're, you know, they're bigger fans when they've interact, like they've leveled up to a certain point. Maybe they get a discount on their tickets. Maybe they get merch. Maybe they get some special perk when it comes to, you know, backstage or anything of that nature. I don't know.
So does that become a way, and this maybe could work into a business model if you're an artist out there. This is something we discussed just kind of briefly before this episode. If you are doing the, say, you know, the TikTok live thing, and you say if someone reaches level 20 or level whatever out of however many, that at that certain point they get so much money off of a ticket price. Well, how do you as an artist make sure that you're actually recouping the money that you otherwise, well, why would you even bother having this, you know, monetarily wise? Now you could say, okay, well, maybe we just get the satisfaction of they're more involved in the community. They're a tighter fan and maybe they get one ticket at a partial piece off, but they're more likely to buy more tickets in the future because they're further involved in your community. That's a good avenue to think about it. Mm-hmm. But also if you want something a little more direct, and I don't know if this would work or not, but this is one idea. If some of those missions to level up include, you know, requesting songs that are then $5 or making, you know, sending some kind of gift that's a donation or whatever that is $10. You know, if those are the things that level you up, well, you could very quickly recoup your money that you would have, quote unquote, lost because or just not gained because of a discounted ticket rate. You might say you discount. Say you're selling a $200 ticket. You're selling awesome tickets, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a $200 ticket and you say, hey, if you're level 20, you get $100 off the ticket. Well, now it's a $100 ticket. You've cut your revenue in half.
Yep.
But if those missions are, hey, you got to do, you know, so many $5 donations and so many $10 donations and gifts and all these little things, well, guess what? You're quickly building that back up. And if you say, you know, to reach that point where you can get $100 off, they have to reach level 35, which is included 10 $10 donations and some $5 donations. Well, guess what? You're now above that original $200 mark. And maybe the fans won't feel like they're getting a bad end of the deal. You know, you don't want that, but they're maybe feeling good because they got a half price ticket.
Right. They're like able to recoup their money almost. Right.
And they don't maybe have to spend all of their money in one chunk, but it all still comes to you. And you've gained maybe more because you've spread out how often. And it's not necessarily a straight up subscription model.
Yeah.
Which I know a lot of people kind of feel kind of uneasy about because you feel like it becomes an obligation, a commitment.
Yeah.
Well, now this is a gift. Right now, this is something they can do. Ooh, it's a challenge. Ooh, if I do this, well, I can level up.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, ooh, I get $100 off a ticket. And ooh, you know,
whatever. You're constantly giving incentives.
Right.
Instead of promising something in return for a subscription.
Right. But,
it's
instant
grad.
It's instant gratification.
Yeah.
And plays into that. So if you're an artist and you're looking into doing this, it doesn't have to be $100 and $200 tickets because that's a lot for a lot of the artists, especially in the group that we're looking at and talking about and trying to really help give advice. You know, a lot of local shows are what, 10 bucks?
Yeah.
You know, 15, 20 is an expensive ticket for a local show, which
crazy.
All of that should be higher.
Right.
But, you know, maybe there's ways you can incorporate this into your workflow. And at those ticket prices, you could afford to give away tickets if somebody gave a handful of donations to you because you would still be, you'd still be earning more.
Right.
You know, that's maybe a way to utilize this idea.
Right.
But, you know, if you have other ideas of ways you can think of off the top of your head of how you can take this idea and turn it into whether it's a profit that you can invest in yourself and invest in your artwork or ways to connect with a new community or ways to increase the connection you have with the community that's already there, let us know.
Absolutely.
That way we can help other people that are in the same boat in the same shoes as you.
Yeah. Well, awesome. I think we provided some good tools for people on this new streaming model, and definitely keep an eye on it because it is not going anywhere. It's going to be here for a while. So, all right. That's all for the music segment. We are about to head into the interview, which I'm very excited about. Again, it's, say his name again.
Cole Thanish.
Okay. I didn't want to butcher the last name.
Yeah. And, we'll have all of his information linked below, but of course, like, and comment and subscribe. We appreciate every single interaction that we have with you because you're our community and we care very deeply about hearing from you and knowing what you do and don't like and what you find useful. Let us know. And also, you know, you can find extra content on our Patreon, which is one way you can support us. You know, we are a free channel. We don't charge anything for people to gain some really, really good advice from various guests over the last 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
And if you want extra access to some special content that we filmed just for you, you can find our Patreon, which is super cheap, and get some additional great content from all the guests that we've had on this season, including Cole, which we'll have on here in just a few minutes.
Sweet. All right, guys. We'll see you on the next one. Thank you.
Hey, y'all. It's Patrick from Successfully Unsigned, your music expert. And today I want to talk about my favorite album releases from 2024. As y'all know, we're all about supporting small artists here on Successfully Unsigned. And I feel like there were so many releases last year that not enough people heard, so I'm gonna tell you about them today. Now, y'all know I'm partial to a female voice and I'm in my pop punk era, so a lot of this list is on that, but just know that it's just my opinion, even though it's the right opinion. Number one, Massey 99 Alpha Beta Omegle. This album to me is 17 minutes of true perfection. I've listened to it probably close to 20 times, and I know on release day alone, I listened to it at least 5 times. Not only is it great music, but it's also really funny in just this strange, surreal world that you're immediately entered into. It starts off with a real diary entry from 2010 made by band member Grayson stating that I'm determined to be an alpha girl. She was ahead of her time. I also am obsessed with the artwork for this album. It really adds to the entire experience, and it's all done by a local artist named Chloe Tyler. When you put all these things together, it creates this really interesting coming-of-age middle school outcast story. I love the entire album front to back, but my favorite track is the closing track, Omegle. Number two, Jana Jameson and her album, Love Sweet. Ironically, I found Jana through Massey 99, who opened for her on her tour for this EP. She had this incredible energy on stage, and it made me go home and listen to her entire discography, and I loved every single song, and I'm not kidding when I say that. So this EP is no exception. It's a roller coaster of heartbreak, but also fun, so you're gonna be crying, but then also dancing. My favorite song off this EP changes constantly, but right now I would say my favorite is Waste Her Time. As y'all know, I was a fan first of Leah, and then we had her on our show, and I got to go on tour with her, and my love for this album has just grown ever since. It is a high energy ride the entire way through. It's an album that you really can grow with and reintroduce yourself to songs that you end up loving even more than you did on the first listen. However, the second that I heard With or Without You, I knew it was gonna be my favorite track, and it still remains my favorite track to this day. Make sure to check out our interview with LOL Slia over on our channel. Number four is BRB TTYL by Dawn. This EP hits you with a wave of nostalgia the second that you hit play. You are instantly transported to 2004 on your home computer whenever BRB TTYL, the title track, opens up. The entire tracklist will make you miss your childhood. The artwork and design really contributes to the entire nostalgic feeling of the album. My favorite track is the title track BRB TTYL, but I would say every other track is a close second. And make sure you check out our new interview with Dawn to hear more about the album. The final album is Feelings Deleting by Hexproof. Y'all know I had to include my favorite band, and it's another nostalgic one, but a little more on the emo side. It opens up with a banger of an intro along with I Hope You Find What You're Looking For, and then immediately slows down to Stay and then picks right back up. Fun fact about Stay, it's actually an old Hexproof song, but this is the new and improved version. Stay also happens to be my favorite track, and it's also the lead singer Atlanta's favorite. We also have an interview with Hexproof that you can find on our channel. Thank you guys so much for watching, and let me know what releases I missed. And comment down below what releases you're looking forward to in 2025. Make sure to follow us everywhere and visit our website su-podcast.com so that you can discover your new favorite artist.
Hey
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Successfully Unsigned. I am Dale Shack, of course, our other co-host here.
DJ Overheat.
There you go. He knows his own name. It's a wonderful thing. And today we are joined by good friend of mine, Cole Thanish.
What's up?
This man right here. And I was telling David earlier before you got here, one of the best vocalists I know and has most amazing stage presences of everybody that I've watched. Like, dude, it's truly amazes me.
Thank you, dude.
And I've been really looking forward to having you on the show for quite a while.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a bit.
Yeah, it's been a couple months.
Glad we can make it happen.
And really looking forward to it. And for all of you out there, Cole and I work together in the 12 South Band, 8 South Band ecosystem. Done a bunch of gigs around Nashville and surrounding states.
All over the country.
We're
everywhere.
And tell them a little bit about, like, performing, whether it's with 12 South or with other stuff. Like, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so, I mean, quick, very brief rundown. I've been doing music like my whole life, basically. I started piano when I was 4 years old, is when my mom put me into lessons there. And I actually had the same teacher from the age of four until I graduated high school and
really?
Then went to music school at Belmont. Yeah, lifelong teacher.
Consistency. Great. I love it.
Right. We used to make bargains over, like, you have to learn this Beethoven piece, but if you do, I'll buy you this sheet music for, like, a Coldplay song or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I was like, deal. Idea. But yeah, piano was a start. And then guitar, I picked it up when I was about 11. And then I did, like, choir and stuff when I was really young. So I kind of got, you know, an idea about for singing, and no doubt, like, the ear training came along with the piano lessons, but I didn't really, like, start seeing myself as a singer, like a front man, until I was about 14, 15.
That's pretty early.
Yeah.
I'm a front man. I'm 14. Like, let's go.
I suppose, like, I didn't think I was. And I was just like, yeah, singing's kind of secondary to playing piano and guitar. And then I just, like, fell in love with it. I'm like, this is it. I don't want to do anything else now.
And so tell us now, like, what all are you involved in now? Like, what is your thing? What are you doing?
So I am primarily a vocal coach. Like, that's my main bread and butter nowadays, so to speak. I used to be much more, sounds weird to say, I used to be more of a performer. I still perform, just not as often as I used to. But I'm working with singers all over the country. I got my vocal coaching practice called Vocalistic. Came up with that name because I love looking at the voice from a very, very broad perspective. Depending on who watches this podcast, you might hear some gripes in the comments, but I got a couple specific complaints with the way that, like, the academic world goes around teaching voice. And look, I've had classical training. I love it. I'm not knocking that at all. It's very, very good stuff. But there's, like, singers can get so pigeonholed so quickly, I find, in, like, academic settings. I think partially is because, like, schools and colleges, you know, they're trying to serve a lot of singers. They're trying to help a lot of musicians figure their way out. And sometimes I can see, like, the utility in being like, here's your voice part, here's your rep, don't worry about anything else for now.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't do that with singers. I'm like, let's break the boxes open. Let's push the limits of the voice. That's a scary word, though, pushing for a singer.
With some people, yeah.
Right? I mean, in a kind of different way. But yeah, we can talk more about all that stuff later. But Vocalistic is my main thing. I work with pop, rock, R&B, and a lot of musical theater singers now, too. I've recently made, like, a step into the musical theater realm, which I'd always loved growing up. My parents were both big musical theater fans. My mom actually studied it for a while in college. And both my parents sing, so it was always kind of a thing, but I didn't really see myself as, like, an actor. But recently, I'm like, this is pretty fun. Let's do more theater.
You know, it didn't surprise me at all when I heard that you were getting into that world.
Yeah.
Because you have a great voice for rock and, like, pop and the stuff that I get to hear you perform.
Yeah.
Which is, I know, just a small sliver of everything that you do.
Yeah.
But in that, you can hear those elements of, like, musical theater,
like, a lot
fit.
Of drama.
Drama would
it's
fit.
It's very fun.
It would fit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And rock and pop have always been my wheelhouse as far as, like, my tastes and my training have gone.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been, like, formally taught how to act at all, but in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is where I'm based now, I've gotten more in touch with that local theater scene and have been in a couple shows there. And it just, like, adds a whole other layer to what you can do as a performer.
Absolutely.
And it's just been a lot of fun. And I also, one of the big reasons why I kind of got into working with more musical theater singers is For a long time, musical theater training had its background in pretty strictly classical and then what would be considered contemporary theater. Sure. But that's not contemporary in the way of we're thinking of like modern contemporary music, pop, rock, R&B, all that stuff, right? It's not quite the same. Mm-hmm. But so many shows, some of which are like, I mean, Hamilton, huge example, Waitress, Heathers. There's been a lot of musicals written in the last 10 to 15 years that are very much in the pop rock vein vocally.
Yes.
And there's a lot of theatrical singers who didn't really get that training as part of their background. And that's where I come in.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So it's been very fun to help singers kind of bridge that gap from the more like older, legit style vocal training into pop and rock.
Yeah. Huh. I feel like I saw Wicked back, I guess, when it came out last year, and it was that seemed like the same kind of thing. It was very like pop rock,
sort of, but just the production range. In that film specifically too. They made it way more like kind of like cinematic pop, I guess you could call it, maybe just way bigger than you would hear from necessarily like a Broadway pit band.
Yeah,
right. But it's also for film, so you know that carries a lot with it. But yeah, the production I think is being leveled up, and I think that's also partially due to technology. Mm-hmm. For instance, I just learned this recently. Pretty much every show you'll see on Broadway in New York, they are running Antares Auto-Tune and Sweetener Tracks.
Wow.
Wild, right? Huh. But like, you know, no singer is going to be mad about having that extra little polish, but at the same time, I'm like,
there's a bit of pride involved.
There's a little pride. I don't want that. No, right. I'm the same. I'm like, no, if I'm going to fail, I want to fail hard.
Yeah.
You know, but
it's my own fault. I want y'all to know it.
Exactly. Right. But yeah, that was an interesting thing to learn recently. But yeah, there's one of my whole, I don't know, you could call it like a tenet of my vocal philosophy is like, just because of the sheer variety of sounds that humans can make, really, I think, highly suggests and encourages a mindset of exploration with the voice. And that's where I start with pretty much every singer I work with. I don't care how long you've been singing. I don't care what your current gig is or if you've even ever had a gig. I want to find where you're at and encourage you to explore some maybe unfamiliar territory with your voice.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you that. What role does like their confidence play in the voice? Because I know there are a lot of people, you know, I started out this way of like, oh, my voice is like very weak. Like, I don't know if like the notes are there, but it's not very strong. And thinking that will go against you.
Totally.
So what have you seen from people coming in being like, well, I don't like, I'm kind of nervous.
It's crazy.
Shy.
Well, I don't know. I'd like to think I'm pretty personable. I usually get people to warm up pretty quick. Cause like, I mean, for my business, I'm running like Instagram ads. So I'm on Zoom with strangers fairly often.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let me tell you what I'm all about. And some of them are like, I'll tell them just like, let me hear you go. Hey. And then they like, they're about to, and then they clam up and they're like, oh God, what am I doing? I'm like, you're not even singing, dude. Yeah. Like, so what are you worried about right now? We're just throwing sound around. And that's a fun place to start, but the confidence thing is huge.
Yeah.
Really huge. And I mean, I've dealt with that. Mm-hmm. And like, I know I'm a technically proficient singer.
Right.
I've been a professional vocalist more or less for about 16, 17 years now. Mm-hmm. But there are still days where I'm like a little off up here and this reacts to that.
It suffers for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
It's crazy. Yeah. I feel like warming up is part of that, which I was going to ask you about that as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, they don't warm up correctly or not at all. Or they'll drink a Red Bull before the show, which I've heard caffeine is just a no-no as far as singing. Like, what are some things that you recommend to people who are?
So you got to remember, number one, a warm up is just that. Mm-hmm. A warm up's not supposed to be a workout. You do not need to go to like your full capacity.
Yeah.
I'm performing now level of vocalization while you're warming up.
Uh-huh.
You might tap the boundaries of that a little bit just to make sure you're okay and flexible and fluid in here.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not the priority. The vocal cords, just like any other muscle or any other, technically they're ligaments, but they're controlled by two little muscles that stretch them and release them. They need a stretch like any other muscle in the body.
Yes.
You want the vocal cords to have access to their full range of motion, just like you would want your bicep to have before you're doing arm day or whatever, you know? And keeping that in mind and also setting up the entire body in a way to serve your voice is essential.
Yes.
I was going to ask about that because I remember there was a gig we did here in town. I forget. It was one of those like old mansion-y places.
Yeah.
And
an old country property somewhere.
Yeah. Somewhere like that. And I remember you talking about how, one of the things you like to do, at least at that point in time, prior to getting on stage and warming up and everything like that, was get into like the yoga, Pilates kind of stuff to specifically to help not just you be, you know, loose on stage, but also your vocals.
Yes, exactly.
Can you talk about how all of that's kind of connected?
Yeah. So I kind of like to look at this stuff, or say you can look at this stuff as like two sides of the same coin. You can look at it with very broad strokes and say like, doing this makes me feel good and therefore it just works for me. You can also dig into the more technical aspects of it and say, look, the fascia in your feet connect to your throat.
Yeah.
And like literally all the way up your body.
Wow.
There is like a web of connective tissue literally from your tongue to your toes.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's nuts. Everything is connected. And it's not just muscles. It's not just skin. Uh-huh. It's the fascia that's really, really important to loosen up. You see, like a lot of ladies nowadays will have like their skincare routine where they're doing very particular like little stretches and stuff around their face. My wife has one that she found and she actually got me into it. And I've done the routine a couple times and it's kind of crazy how quickly I'll feel more ready to sing at full capacity when I do that compared to not.
Wow.
Now I'm not going to spend the time in the mirror going through that. I'll do like maybe 15 minutes on the floor and get my whole body moving instead.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, there is a concrete physical reason why that stuff is so beneficial. Mm. And man, even the type of shoes you wear affect how you, how it can affect how you sing. I shouldn't say it's like hard and fast black and white rule, because here's a good image. Balancing the voice is not a balanced beam. It's a balanced disc with the ball in the middle, and it wobbles in every single direction just because of how many contributing factors there are to what actually comes out.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of stuff you can kind of clue into, and different singers are kind of at different stages of developing that awareness, number one.
Right.
Like that's the first step. Then you also got to learn how to adjust, how to work with it in order to serve your voice.
So for people who haven't maybe spent time with a vocal coach and learned some of these things, what are some of the first biggest factors that you think of when you think of that kind of rotating disc? What are like, think about these first, consider these before you sing or as you sing or as you prepare to sing. Mm-hmm. What are those first few big factors?
Yeah. Beyond like the basic stuff of just like getting good rest and hydrating, breath and tension.
Okay.
Absolutely pivotal. Tapping into the breath, doing actual breath work has been huge for not just me, but also the singers I work with. There's a lot of muscles involved when you're singing. Everyone hears, well, you got to breathe from the diaphragm. It's like, that's just one. It's a really big, really strong muscle, but that's only one part of a much bigger equation. But tapping into the breath in a way that opens up flexibility in your whole abdominal wall, your obliques, your back, even your pelvic floor. Like all of those muscles can contribute to like the internal pressure that is created when your lungs are full of air at any capacity. All these muscles can be involved in regulating that outflow and intake.
Wow. Is that why I've gotten a cramp in my back when I've shouted too loud singing on the radio?
Dude, that could have been.
I mean,
for
like,
real.
There's been once or twice I've been
old
like,
man.
I've been
like driving 60 down, years old, bro.
Dude, there's once or twice I've been like driving down the road and like I'm just feeling it. There's a song and I'm like, I know.
So just shout and get
just screaming the song at the top of my lungs.
Yeah.
Well, you're then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, my back.
Yeah, dude, you're also in your car seat, which is not the best posture for singing, right? Posture is very important.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. Yeah, cars are not designed to like serve our spine.
No,
they're just not.
let me ask you this real quick.
Yeah,
I've always wondered, because I feel like I always perform better when I haven't eaten before a show. Is diet in any way connected to singing?
In a few different ways. One thing I think everybody really just needs to be on the lookout for in general is like any food that is going to be naturally inflammatory, which pretty much every processed food is.
Yeah.
Inflammation bears a physical impact.
Yes.
It makes stuff bigger. It applies more pressure to your entire nervous system.
Right.
So that's one thing. But also like specific things like you talked about caffeine earlier, right? Uh-huh. I drink a lot of coffee. I yeah. love caffeine. It's my best friend. I also hydrate a ton yeah. on my gig days. Right. And I actually recently have been dabbling in consuming intentionally more dairy, cheese and milk, which is like a big no-no
yeah.
for a lot of singers. But so long as you have enough water in your system too, that stuff should not be built up in a way that really disrupts your voice.
Yes.
And if you are noticing that you struggle to sing with that stuff in your system, there's probably a way that you could warm up better in order to mitigate that.
Yeah.
So when, okay. you, when you talk mm-hmm. about hydration, when do you start hydrating?
Depending on how long the gig day is and what else I have going on that day, at a minimum 4 hours before I have to perform.
Gotcha.
Because it takes that long for your body to process the water internally. Yeah. But you can also kind of accelerate that as far as your voice is concerned by using nebulizers and steamers and stuff.
Yeah.
Because the moisture just gets there right away. Need electrolytes. Water is almost worthless without electrolytes because mm-hmm. it's just going to get constantly pumped through your system
yes.
instead of actually bringing those micronutrients and minerals that you need to the right. places where they got to go.
So do you have a favorite way to get both water and electrolytes for this kind of purpose?
Yeah, in a pinch, if I'm on the road, Smart Water, Life Water, anything like that yeah. that has the you minerals, know electrolytes yeah. in. I also like have like Liquid IV or Prime sticks that you just mix yeah. up with any water. Like, okay. yeah, I'll consume those. Some kind of electrolyte mix every day. Magnesium is really good too, especially for recovery.
I've heard that.
Yeah, like bodybuilders talk about that a lot. Mm-hmm. And I got a couple of dear friends of mine who are bodybuilders that actually, some of their insight into what they're doing, like they're competitive bodybuilders.
Right.
It's insane mm-hmm. what they do. And some of the insight I've gained from just hearing them talk about it has affected the way I talk about voice too. Like one, yeah. this one concept of variety begets growth.
Mm-hmm.
That's another mm-hmm. reason why I encourage singers to explore their sound. But back in like the consumption stuff with electrolytes, it's magnesium is so good for your muscles while they're recovering.
Yeah.
And you got tiny little muscles in here that yeah. need to recover the same way your legs and everything. Core and everything else does
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So mm-hmm. what would you say the most rewarding part of being a vocal coach is for you?
Seeing and hearing a singer like crack the code to a problem they didn't even know they had is like the coolest thing.
Really?
Where sound just happens in a way that where not only it sounded good, but it felt free.
Mm-hmm.
And that if they, watching them experience that for the first time in a part of their voice where they haven't before is just so rewarding, so yeah. fulfilling, because it's just so cool. And that, back to the confidence thing, those moments directly play into that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the level of trust that singers have with their instrument. Like, I think a good vocal coach really just needs to help singers like find ways to love their instrument, to trust their instrument, not only knowing how to take care of it and treat themselves well, but like thank their voice even on the bad days
mm-hmm.
for like doing the gig.
Yeah.
I've had plenty of those where I'm like, not in my A game, yeah. not my A game, but I did it, you know, did the job, entertained the people. That's cool.
Yeah.
And you gotta give yourself grace for those kind of moments.
Right.
And also like in the little moments when you're warming up the voice for the day, the other day I had a client of mine in Charlotte. He had the 2-show day playing Hunchback and Hunchback of Notre Dame, mm-hmm. which is an incredibly, not just vocally demanding role, but physically too, because his
yeah.
posture is all yeah. form for the whole show.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So like the
right.
way he carries himself, like we had to be strategic about how he sung certain parts because of how he had to stand.
My goodness.
It's really wacky, but he woke up and it's just like great opening night, but I woke up feeling horrible. And I'm like, don't freak out. Don't freak out. Breathe with me and move with me for 30 minutes. And I promise you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And we did it. We went through the routine, went through some breath work, a little bit of movement, a little bit of stretching. And he was like, God, I feel so much better. I'm like, see, dude, don't freak yourself out, because that mental spiral, ooh, it'll kill you.
Yeah.
As a singer, it's horrible.
So when, you know, question about sort of stage presence and, mm-hmm. and all of that, I think a lot of singers, they want to move around on stage, you know, they want to grab the mic, they want to walk over, so when you're moving or dancing and singing, obviously there's a breath element to it. Like, is that something that's easily translated from just standing and singing and using the same muscles, or is that something that you have to develop over time to be able to really move and
yeah.
sing?
I want to say a little bit of both. You definitely need to develop it over time, But the muscle memory that you're training when you're just like relatively still and running through a piece in a rehearsal or in a lesson, like a lot of that stuff will stick unless you're really doing something crazy with your body.
Right.
Because a lot of that is internal and has to do with, I call it a signal chain, a singer's signal chain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Coming from your, I actually think the chakra system is a really good way to visualize it. Coming from your root. If you picture your source of sound as being pretty low in your core and just picturing a chain of events that works together and supports your sound on the way out is really, really good. And that's, that can be felt and experienced very internally. When you're doing all that, like, these flashy poses and going crazy on stage, like, it is easy to kind of throw that out of whack if you go too hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get, you learn your limits in that respect over time.
Right.
So it does take time. A little bit of both, though. That muscle memory does stick so long as you're consistent in training.
Consistency, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of stage presence, as we kind of talked briefly about earlier and you kind of brought it back up, how do you develop the stage presence that you have, dude?
Dude, I like, don't know.
I want to be like you.
And that's all for today. No.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't really know. I guess like from a young age, I had gotten comfortable performing in front of people because like my first piano recital, I was 5 or 6 maybe. And choir recitals starting at the age of, I don't know, 9, it was like 4th grade, something like that. I don't know. I love performing. My parents also have been nothing but encouraging and loving for me in my entire music career, my entire life. And I don't know, like when you have a good support system that can convince you that you can go do the cool thing you want to do, like that in itself is really, really powerful.
Yeah.
But as far as like learning how to perform and like sell the performance on stage, I mean, I definitely had to learn a few things. I had some great mentors in college and immediately thereafter, and in high school too, actually. I don't know though, man. Cause like my favorite frontmen weren't exact. Not all of them are like the biggest, most energized performers.
Right.
Like some of my favorite singers of all time was like James LaBrie from Dream Theater. And he just kind of walks and stands. Yeah. Like he doesn't do a whole lot. Okay. His voice is doing all kinds of acrobatics. But then at the same time, I also love bands like Muse growing up. Matthew Bellamy, another huge influence for me. So I don't know. I feel like my musical tastes range from like very reserved and like I have to do this the right way or else it isn't worth it versus like we're just partying, man. Have a blast on stage and go wild.
Yeah.
And like I don't have much of an in between. Uh-huh. So some kind of mix of all that just, I don't know, culminated in what I got. But again, I started doing bar gigs when I was 14, just me and a guitar.
Well,
and I guess I learned a few like tricks and gimmicks.
There. And then just reps, I guess, doing it so much.
Yeah, but you really just got to put in the reps and you'll learn what works. And like there's some variance between certain crowds, depending on where you are, age range, demographics, all that. Like those cultural things that can change from city to city, you know?
That's true.
Like you're not going to memorize which of those work where specifically, but you know, you kind of develop your toolkit as you go along and eventually just kind of hopefully find your own shtick, so to speak. Yeah. But that party band with 12 South though, like it, I mean, that was the first gig I ever got where I was encouraged to really just go nuts on stage.
Yeah.
I'm like, sweet. Let me get into this.
Free range and go. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I told you this at the time. This kind of plays into a lot of my vocal philosophy, but out of college, I was not a very healthy dude. I was decently overweight. I was eating like crap, drinking all the time, just like really not treating myself well. And I discovered chiropractic care and got my first 12 South gig around the same time within about a month or so of each other.
Okay.
And man, that changed my life.
It really gives you one crack in your back. And that's
like they helped me fix my posture, which no doubt helped me with my voice and everything. Mm-hmm. And then the gig, I was literally, forgive me, but dancing my ass off. Like it was melting away every couple of weeks, you know, as I'm just going all out doing 3 hours of cardio on stage.
Yeah.
So
of course being, you know, working sound or sometimes working lights, like I don't have to do the same acrobatics y'all do. I sit in the back of the house with my coffee and my iPad and I'm like,
I usually got my hot mug or a thermos or something on top of the sound rig side stage. I'll go sip that whenever I can. That warm liquid just feels nice.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've just always been a pretty high energy dude and invested in whatever show I'm putting on. So I think it was never. To say this without trying to brag on myself too bad.
Do it.
I never had to be convinced to give a performance my all.
Okay.
I just did it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, what the hell else am I doing here? You know, this is why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just dive in, be invested in that. And then I've never been much of a dancer, but I learned the steps we need to
that
show and the blocking and the choreo and all that.
Yep.
And that, that kind of helped me up my game, learning how to move better on stage. I was actually thinking about this the other day. I remember as a kid, I felt very, very awkward in the middle school and high school musicals I did.
Sure.
I'm like, I don't know what to do with anything. What do I do with my body? I'm
still trying to learn how to walk pretty much.
Literally, basically. Yeah. But with the 12 South gig, shout out to Anna and Jason. If y'all watch this, they pushed me because I came in fairly early in the game when they started getting more bookings and stuff. And they were looking for singers that, they could train for the sake of their show.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it is a high demand show for a vocalist, but they push their performers to do it right and they're encouraging and along the way. And shout out to them. I learned a lot. I have learned a lot as being part of that band.
Yeah. It pushes you in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I'm glad for the 2 years, something like that, that I've been with
only
them now.
Two so far, man.
I think it's about two.
Nine now. It's just, like a blur. Yeah. Most of it. Such a great group of people and just stellar players and talent all around. Very, very fun.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that we got this chance from those gigs to get you on here and to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, same.
And Cole, please tell us, everybody, where can we find more of your stuff? How can people reach out to you? How can people contact you?
Instagram's probably the best spot, although I'm very behind on my DMs. Sorry. But at Vocalistic and also at my name, Cole Thanisch. Thanisch is Thanisch. Very old German last name with too many letters. But yeah, you can find me there. I'm not that active on social media, but I'll post on my stories and any performance clips I have. I'm going to start posting on TikTok and stuff again like that. Wild, wild west of the internet out there. But yeah, that's it as far as online. Like I said, I don't perform as much as I used to. So I'm not going to be posting show dates very often. But I'm kind of making triangles around the Southeast between Charlotte, Atlanta, Nashville area. Just going all there all the time.
Okay.
Love it. Well, make sure that you follow him. You'll find all of the links down in the description below. Make sure you also follow us, Successfully Unsigned, everywhere. Unsigned Podcast on TikTok, and you can find us at our website, su-podcast.com. But if you want to hear more of this really good practical advice and kind of insight into the vocal coaching side of the music industry, we will be continuing this conversation over on our Patreon. You can find us there, linked below.